Bibles to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews 4. A little bit about what we'll be doing today and this evening and probably into the week or into the following weeks is the fact that we have made a little diagram, I think, that will explain our course of action. And that is simply this. You have in the middle the author of the book of Hebrews, whoever that may be. In the middle, you have the author of the book of Hebrews. And on each side, you have two boxes. A box on this side that has STP in it, and a box on this side that has Jesus in it. And the method of the book of Hebrews is simply to say this. Everything that we have over here about Jesus in terms of his person and his work is all taught by and illustrated by the Old Testament. Primarily, the sacrifices of Israel, the tabernacle of Israel, and the priesthood of Israel. For this reason, we have set up our tabernacle down here at the front. You may not be able to see all parts of it, but it's going to become critical for the understanding of the book. If we have nothing in this box, STP box, if we have nothing in it, we will have nothing to put in this box over here. Or if we have nothing from here, we will have very little over here that we will understand. And therefore, this is a very, very critical diagram that I'll be using over and over and over again, and will be attempting to fill up the STP box, sacrifices, tabernacle, and priesthood. Now, that all revolved and centered around this that we have in front of us. Many of you know something about the tabernacle. Many of you do not. But all the sacrifices in Israel were made here. Only here. Nowhere else but here are the sacrifices made. This is, as you can see, the tabernacle. The tabernacle consisted basically of the following parts. There was the outer court. And by the way, I'm going to be using a pointer here, the laser pointer. The reason I often do not use this, it's a good pointer. See over here on the screen, over on the wall, the red dot, or up here, the red dot. It's hard to miss. And as we said the last time we had this, if any of you nod off to sleep, I'm going to hit you right in the eye with a laser. And that will wake you up. No, I'll try to keep it away from the audience, but it is important to be able to identify objects down here with this pointer. Now, one feature the pointer has is my hand is very steady right here. But see that little thing? It jumps all around. And I don't know why, but it's very, very sensitive. So if I put this down and grab the other hand and try and hold it, you just can't do it. So if it jumps around, I'm okay. It's just the nature of this thing. And if you think it's me, you try it. You find that this is very hard to hold a steady bead on anything with. So that we're looking then at the tabernacle. The tabernacle is fenced in. See the fence all the way around it? The first thing you meet when you come into the tabernacle is the altar. All of the sacrifices of Israel were made at that altar. You could come into that point. I could come into that point. The priests could come into that point. Anybody could. This was an open access type of thing. However, if you notice, this little building was in two parts. Now, there was a veil right here, but I want you to ignore that. And see this part right here? That is Holy of Holies. That's what that's called. Now, the big thing we'll be talking about today is this curtain. I see the red light clearly on this side. You don't see it at all. But clearly right here, this is the biggest no stop here sign anywhere in the Bible. And the reason it says stop here is because in this ark box right in there inside of that room is one thing. A box with a lid on it and two cherubim overlooking that altar. And nobody could come into that area. Now God developed for us, and again this is a preview type of thing, God developed in the approach to himself a system. Is it possible to approach God? What right do I have as a man to approach God? Or do I have any? Well, we're going to find out that God in his teaching and in the teaching of the book of Hebrews certainly is going to say in regard to approach to God, there are three lights. There is God's stoplight, and God says, don't come past this point. So first very important concept is the idea of God's stoplight. We'll look at that in Exodus chapter 3. And if you'll turn to that, let's begin to get the essence of what is involved in these things. God's stoplight. Exodus 3. The basic, most fundamental concept about God is found in verse 5 as Moses approaches the burning bush. Verse 5, then he, God, said, please note these words. This is in essence what we'll look at in detail later. Do not come near here. God's basic idea is do not come into my presence. Do not come. A stoplight. And that is the first and most basic concept about man's approach to God. Basically then, the first thing is man cannot approach God. God says, stop here. And he said that several times in several ways. First of all, he says it to Moses simply in these words. And if you can picture the presence of God in a burning bush, and Moses looks at the bush, and he lifts his foot, and he starts to walk up and examine it. And God said, don't dare come near. God's stoplight. When God gave his law in Exodus 19, he told Moses to get the people ready. And in getting the people ready, the basic instruction was this. God is going to appear on Sinai. And when God appears on Sinai, you stand back. God will appear at Sinai. Don't even touch your foot on the mountain. If you do, I will kill you. Do not come here. And therefore, in words to Moses, in the giving of the law, God says, I'll be on this mountain. I haven't done it yet. I haven't appeared yet, but I'm going to. And when I do, don't you step one foot forward. And so Moses, he says in biblical language, sanctify the people. Set them apart. Warn them that they're not to come to the mountain. Then later on, God gave another stop sign. And it was this curtain right here. God was in the ark. And God says, that curtain says, don't you dare ever, ever come near or I will strike you dead. And as is always the case, there were a couple of people that took that instruction very lightly. They didn't really take it seriously. They were both priests. Their name was Nadab and Abihu. And they said, well, let's go in and pull up the curtain and let's approach the Lord. And they did it. And they were struck dead. And then God says, I'm going to begin to give you my second set of instructions. You say, well, if God always says, don't come, does that mean no one could come to God? Well, only in His proper way. And the second light we'll look at is a caution light. And that will be Leviticus 16. I hope you can see the caution light. Yellow is very hard to project because you just don't see yellow. And yellow light says caution. And here's what the caution light means. You may come inside of this veil once a year, but only one man can do it. Only one. Yeah, you could come to me on a limited basis. Limited as to time, limited as to who can do it. And then we will come to the book of Hebrews, and the book of Hebrews will turn the light green. And the green light will say, and let's go to the passage that we're really looking at. It's Hebrews 4. Now let's add one other thing to this. If you could only come once a year, limited as to time, and limited as to who could do it, then who could do it? One man, and only one man in Israel could do it, and that was the high priest. And therefore we begin in Hebrews chapter 4 with these words in verse 14. Since then, we have a great high priest. And the book of Hebrews is going to weave all kinds of intricate parallel between the priest and Jesus. He will use two chapters without break, chapters 9 and 10, and all he will talk about is we have a high priest. And he's going to go back to the Old Testament. And he's going to focus on that one particular feature like this. And he's going to say, there was only one high priest. That's the P part of our formula. The STP. And only one high priest once a year could ever come beyond that veil. You say, well, he is like Christ. Sort of. He was like Christ, sort of. Enough to make a super good illustration. But Christ will so far exceed everything that priests could do. Now, when the priest once a year made that long journey, and we're going to focus on the journey of that priest, the high priest once a year. Oh, by the way, what is it called? If you're English speaking, you speak of the Day of Atonement. If you're Jewish, the Jews speak of what? Yom Kippur. Heard Yom Kippur? That's a Jewish holiday. And it's a very important one. And it is called the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. And on Yom Kippur, once a year, this one single man made a trip. And his trip started right out there. And he came into this altar. And when he came to this altar, he knew something. I'm a sinner. And therefore he made a sacrifice right there for himself. Made a sacrifice for himself. This is the illustration box now over here. The priest came in once a year and made a sacrifice for himself because he was a sinner. And then he went beyond that altar and went into the place here called the holy place, and he lifted the veil and went in to the presence of God. And so we'll be talking about the journey of the high priest. The journey of the high priest was from out here where he sacrificed for his sins on in to the presence of God. One man, one time, once a year was all he could ever do it. And never, ever, ever, ever did anyone go beyond that veil. Okay? The author of Hebrews says, that gives me a wonderful lesson about the person of Jesus. Because when he came in, and can someone see the first contrast? The high priest at that altar on the outside made a sacrifice for himself because he was a sinner. Jesus is our high priest. What's the contrast? He never made a sacrifice for himself. And therefore, understanding who this person is going to depend on understanding about the priest. The priest, in his work, and I'll just make 2 points. The person of the priest, high priest, was a sinner. The person of Jesus was sinless. The work of the high priest was year after year after year after year after year. Jesus died for our sins once. And if you'll notice in Hebrews 4:14, you have the second mention of Jesus as high priest. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens. Now, I can't do it, but I can explain it to you visually. He says a contrast is this. All of this moving from the sacrifice of the priest for himself into the presence of God was all vertical. It was all horizontal. All horizontal. And therefore, he is going to say in chapter 4, verse 14, let's take the tabernacle and tip it on end. Let's pick up this part and raise it like this. And when Jesus died, he went all the way from earth through the heavens, vertical relationship of the tabernacle, from earth all the way toward heaven. And so the trip of the high priest was from the altar to the ark. The trip of Jesus, or the journey of Jesus, was from earth to the throne of God, and he sat down because perfect salvation was once for all accomplished. Now, this is the essence of what we have then in this lesson or illustration box involving the sacrifices, the tabernacle, and the priesthood. Now, one other thing, and I'm basically, I guess, trying to sell this hour the importance of this study. What one single subject occupies more of the Bible in pure volume than any other subject? There it is right there. Tabernacle. There is more about the tabernacle in the Old Testament, beginning in Exodus through Leviticus into Numbers. There is more in terms of sheer volume about this than any other subject. Why? Because it is the illustration box from which the New Testament illustrates the person and the work of Jesus Christ. And this is the importance of knowing it and understanding it in a full sense of the word. Now, let's go back to our stoplights. We're coming down now, and we'll do all this in detail. I just want you to get the general view of it. The green light of Hebrews, chapter 4, verse 16. Moses would have literally fainted had God said anything like this to him. Any Israelite said, "Oh no, this cannot be. This is not so." What do you mean by the words in verse 16? "Let us therefore draw near." And let me stop right there. You say, shouldn't you chew your fingernails a little bit? Be a little bit afraid that something's going to happen if you go into the presence of God? Well, notice the next words. With confidence. And confidence is a word that we will see used in the book of Acts that meant boldness. Let us draw near with boldness to the throne of grace. And can you see again the throne of grace in Old Testament terms represented the presence of God, and what was parallel to the throne of grace? See that ark right in there? The presence of God. That was there in, quote, unquote, the throne of grace. But they couldn't come. One man, once a year, caution light, could do it on very limited terms, but not often. And now we can come with great boldness. Now, I don't want to blow my climax to next hour by, no, I'm not going to do it. Don't look. Okay. I want to take you through, as we will next hour, the green light of Hebrews, and show how that over and over and over again, the high priest has made his sacrifice, not once a year, once for all. And now we will find that we can... I'm about to do it. But I'll simply give you the passages. Hebrews 4:16 says, come on, boldly. Hebrews 7:19, draw near to God. 7:25, 10:19, 10:22 is all saying, look, you've got a high priest. Come on in. And you have free, bold access to the throne of God. All right, now let's take then back to chapter 4, verse 16, and look at the doctrine that is here developed of the green light that is there for us. And we have time enough, I think, to at least outline what we'll be doing. We have now come to the major theme of the book of Hebrews, which is, and I don't want to write high priesthood every time, so just HP. STP is motor whatever, and HP is high power, okay? The high priesthood of Jesus. The major doctrine taught in the book of Hebrews. And the first really detailed section we have is in chapter 4, verse 14 through verse 16. And each verse outlines into a point. Number one, what do we know about the person of our high priest? 4:14. Can you see, by the way, the thing that we have to teach and understand that would be unnecessary for the readers of the book of Hebrews, and what would it be? If the author of Hebrews were now speaking to this people, he would say, take this thing out of here. We don't need that. Walk down the street. Take a look at it. You can take a tour. You can go down. You can see the smoke. In fact, just look out the window. See the smoke going up? It's going from that altar, right? And they want to say, yes, we know that, author of Hebrews. We've seen it. We do see it. We see it. We smell it every day of the week. We know that's happening. Because remember, as the book of Hebrews was written, the tabernacle in the temple, as it later was placed, was still in operation. And so if he wanted to use the illustration of that altar out there, he could say, now, y'all don't have to listen to me for a moment. Just look down the block. See the smoke? It's going up. How high does it go? Out of sight. Well, they knew that. How about the high priest? You say, oh, yeah, I know the high priest. I saw him the other night. I saw him driving down the street in his chariot or whatever. And I saw him at a restaurant. I know the high priest. I've spoken to him, as a matter of fact. We can't say that. And therefore, all of this is blank to us. But it is the basis for the teaching of Hebrews. Without this, and I know this is too strong, but without this, you're just losing right and left the teaching. Can you imagine what would be lost if you had to learn, and in learning something, all of the teacher's illustrations were pulled out? Or you didn't know about what he was talking when he spoke of those things? The lesson would become very, very meaningless. And therefore, that's why we'll have this tabernacle up here. And if you cannot see part of it, I'd invite you between classes. Come on up. Here's the outer court with the fence. Here's the holy place. There's the stop sign, the veil. You can see it hanging there. And on the inside is the ark. And that was where God was present with his people. There's a name given for all of it. You say, well, tabernacle. Well, yes, true. But there was another name, probably more frequently than tabernacle. This was called the tent of meeting. Now, the critical thing on that issue is this. The tent of meeting, who with who? This was not Israel's social hall. They didn't get together at this point and all meet together. As we would say, this is the auditorium of meeting. And what kind of meeting do we talk about? It's meeting of Christians together. That was not true of this. Tent of meeting means the tent where man meets God. And this whole illustration thing is going to point to the person and the work of Christ. So chapter 4, verse 14. And in verse 14, we're going to talk about the person of our high priest. And we'll not get into this hour. I'm sure we won't. Will be his position, will be his character, and his work underneath the person. But let's continue to survey. In verse 15, we're going to take a little different turn in the road. In verse 15, is going to say as follows. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. And so verse 15 will move from the person to the empathy of our high priest. The empathy of our high priest, 4:15. His person, and in verse 15, his empathy. Third, and in verse 16, we make a little different turn in the road. And this time, it moves from the person, from the empathy, to an emphasis on the sufficiency of our high priest. 4:16. Let us therefore, green light, draw near with boldness to the throne of grace. Not the ark, as in the tabernacle, but now the presence of God, the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and may find grace to help in time of need. Great contrast. You go within this veil, you don't find grace, you find death. Immediate death, and we'll look at that in Leviticus 16. Immediate death. And now, by the way, do you recall the fact when Jesus died on the cross, this thing was still in operation? But when he died and said, "It is finished," what happened out at the tabernacle? The veil, right here, was rent in two from top to bottom, symbolizing the fact that he has done the work and you can now come to the throne of grace on the basis of the finished and the complete work of Jesus Christ. Well, this is the essence then of what we're going to be doing. We'll begin next hour with the person of the high priest, and we'll look at him in several ways. We'll locate where he is called such in the book of Hebrews. And for this morning, as we said, we're not going to look at Hebrews 11, which would have been the faith of Moses. And I'm at a point in Hebrews where I'm really struggling because the faith of Moses is so good that I took it out of my notebook and put it on a shelf because, as you well know, I have a hard time not jumping ahead. And I would be into the faith of Moses, and I don't want to do that at all this morning. We want to look at the three lights along the way to approach God. And by the way, do you see anything about this that a child cannot understand? Do you see anything here? I won't ask for hands, but do you know what happens when your dad comes down the freeway and comes to a stoplight? He stops. Or you say, "Dad, you just ran a light." And you look in the rearview mirror to see if you see another red light flashing. But that's understandable, isn't it? The neat thing about the Word of God is it's written for kids. We often think, you know, how old do you have to be? How old do you have to understand a red light? How about the caution light? Now, I guess I ought to say, in my own defense, a yellow light means stop. Or better yet, it's a light that means stop if you can without someone tying into the back of your car. But it basically means stop in terms of traffic, okay? It doesn't mean, speed up as it does to many people. But nonetheless, always assume, I don't know why we're talking about traffic, but always assume that people come through on the yellow light. Don't you do that? And usually they come through on a yellow light and get about half of the red. As a matter of fact, how many have ever, well, I want to ask, gotten a ticket for running a red light? Have you seen the ticket form, how it reads? It's got a little section on it that if they went through partly on the yellow, were they halfway through? And if they were, you check that. Were they three quarters the way through or almost through? Or did the light change after they were halfway through? You check that. And those are all things that modify whether or not you get a ticket for a red light. But what child can I don't know how to make it any simpler. God had a red light. He had a yellow light in the Old Testament. But today, the cross of Jesus says the light is green. And if you come through Him, you can come to God. We'll pick up with this next hour. Father, we're thankful for Your Word and Your truth. Help us to understand the greatness of the high priesthood of Jesus Christ. In His name, amen.